Welcome back to Full Disclosure in part two of our special series on the Federal Reserve. Scott Miner does acknowledge that the Federal Reserve has made mistakes in the past.
There have been two great instances in its history where the downside of economic activity was extremely painful. The Great Depression of the 1930s, and most recently the financial crisis, which is often referred to as the Great Recession. But in the case of the Great Recession, once the Federal Reserve recognized the size of the crisis and the problem and the dislocation which was occurring as a result of the collapse in housing values, it was very aggressive in stopping the decline of asset prices by creating money. That, however, was not true in the 1930s. Something which the Federal Reserve was criticized for by people such as Milton Friedman, and even the current chairman, Dr. Bernanke, at Dr. Friedman's 90th birthday, actually stated that the depth and length of the Great Depression was in part the result of errors made by the Federal Reserve. And he apologized to Dr. Friedman for the mistakes of the Fed.
Scott just said that in this latest Great Recession, the Fed was very aggressive in stopping the decline of asset prices by creating money. That's what he said. But according to Mr. Griffin, this is entirely the wrong direction to go. As he explains in his audiobook, this response is exactly the process by which we wound up in the Great Depression.
The expansion of the money supply in the 1920s clearly shows that effect. It was not a steady advance, but a series of convulsions. Each cycle was at a higher level than the previous one. That is because the busts that followed the booms were not allowed to play themselves out. The monetary scientists now had so many mechanisms at their command, they were able to initiate new expansions to cancel out the downward adjustments. It was like prescribing increasing doses of narcotics to postpone the awareness of an advancing disease. It increased the prestige of the doctor, but it did not bode well for the patient. Between 1920 and 1929, there were three distinct business cycles, with several minor ones within them. For the average American, it was confusing and destructive. For the investor, it was a roller coaster ride to oblivion.
There have been times where the Federal Reserve acknowledgingly has erred in the implementation of its policy. So those are situations where there has been a downside for the public for the existence of the Federal Reserve. But on balance, over the last century, the public has generally avoided the environment which was existed before the creation of the Fed, which was this frequent boom-bust panic sort of events that the Fed was designed to end.
Mr. Griffin disagrees.
Since its inception, it has presided over the crashes of 1921 and 1929, the Great Depression of 29 to 39, recessions in 53, 57, 69, 75, and 81, a stock market Black Monday in 87, and a 1,000% inflation, which has destroyed 90% of the dollar's purchasing power.
Again, Scott Miner is more moderate in his evaluation of the effectiveness of the Fed.
If you look at a history of what went on between the 1950s and the 1980s, we had a protracted period of about 30 years of just slowly increasing inflation, which ended in the 1980s with dramatically high interest rates and high inflation, which resulted in a very harsh economic downturn in the early years of the Reagan administration. The likelihood that should be a scenario that would replay if we do not find a way to reverse quantitative easing, I think, is very high, which is that we are not going to be suddenly hit with a big bout of inflation, but that over time, if this excess liquidity is not removed from the system, prices will gradually start to rise. And as I often say, inflation is an insidious creature, right? It doesn't just walk in your front door and announce it's there. It just slowly starts to creep in as prices of things begin to gradually increase, and you really don't recognize you have an inflation problem until it's well underway. And so if we do not find a way to reverse the excess liquidity of quantitative easing, once we have an economy where we've taken the slack out of the economy, when unemployment drops to a level which is corresponds more to full employment, maybe somewhere between even 4 or 5%, then we'll start to see inflationary pressure. And that is when the Fed will face the challenge of how to reverse this policy without creating damage either to the economy directly through a recession or indirectly through allowing the beginning of a wage price spiral that could go on for decades.
Mr. Griffin is unforgiving in his indictment of the Federal Reserve.
There can be no argument that the system has failed in its stated objectives. Furthermore, after all this time, after repeated changes in personnel, after operating under both political parties, after numerous experiments in monetary philosophy, after almost 100 revisions to its charter, and after the development of countless new formulas and techniques, there has been more than ample opportunity to work out mere procedural flaws. It is not unreasonable to conclude, therefore, that the system has failed, not because it needs a new set of rules or more intelligent directors, but because it is incapable of achieving its stated objectives. That leads to the question, why is the system incapable of achieving its stated objectives? The painful answer is, those were never its true objectives.
Scott Minard is assured that the Federal Reserve is indeed serving the role for which it was specifically created.
On balance, over the last century, the public has generally avoided the environment which was existed before the creation of the Fed, which was this frequent boom-bust panic sort of events that the Fed was designed to end.
Mr. Griffin is energized by the latest attention given to the Fed.
For the first time in American history, I think we've had this kind of an alert. Now, will we allow the banks to again fool us by coming up with some kind of a, quote, reform? Ah, they'll say, well, just like they did back in 1910, they'll say, we will provide the reform. We, the ones who created the problem in the first place, are going to solve the problem that we created. That is what will happen today. In fact, you can already see it happen. When we turn to questions of what are the solutions to the banking crisis, who do we turn to? The chairman of the Federal Reserve Board to tell us what to do. And he's the guy representing the very force that created the problem. We turn to the heads of the banks to tell us what to do. You see, we're poised, perfectly poised to make the same mistake again.
But even a 1.5% increase in interest rates would be devastating to the U.S. economy. And so there is, a very high risk that any increase in interest rates could cause a lot of financial turmoil. And that is one of the reasons why I believe that the Federal Reserve will be so focused on maintaining low interest rates for a number of years to keep the expansion going and to bring unemployment down, and will not allow interest rates to rise. But there's no certitude to the fact that the Federal Reserve can forever control long-term interest rates. While right now there appears to be no threat to that, in the long run, it may not be possible for them to keep rates at these levels for a protracted period of time.
It sounds like an endless loop. We asked Mr. Griffin what he thinks we should do. What can be done?
What can be done? You're doing it. Get the information out. Full disclosure is what can be done. No conspiracy, and I'm going to use that word because these are conspiracies. No conspiracy can really survive the light of exposure for very long. Now, it doesn't stop new ones from coming into existence, of course. But we as citizens, if we want to remain free, have an obligation to ourselves and our children to fight against this evil and to expose it and to keep exposing it and shed the light on it until finally it just burns up and goes away. That's all that can be done. Because if we don't do that, then these people will win without competition.
Scott Minard acknowledges that we have some hard choices ahead of us.
We eventually will come to the crossroads, and we will have to make a decision which is more important. Is price stability more important than allowing the economy to take some hard knocks? Or will we decide that keeping the economy moving forward is more important, and we'll accept a lower purchasing value to our currency in the future? And we're not there yet, but the crossroads are out there.
But to answer your question, we have the opportunity right now because of the aroused awareness of the average American to a degree much greater than I have ever seen before. Now, if we can just prevent this cartel from twisting that awareness and that drive for reform and using it to their advantage, then I think we might just come out the other end with a sound monetary system totally backed by gold or silver.
We want to know what you, the viewers, think. Do you think that the Federal Reserve is critically important in maintaining some kind of stability and equilibrium in our monetary system? Or should we abolish the Fed and return to a monetary system backed by precious metals like gold or silver? Please call our full disclosure town hall number and let us know what you think at 1-800-867-7777. That's 1-800-867-7777. And if you leave your name and number, we'll get back to you. Or you can log on to our website at fulldisclosure.net and leave your opinion there. If you leave your email address, we'll be happy to respond. I'm Leslie Dutton. Please join us next time for another edition of Full Disclosure. Thank you.
To respond to this question or comment on this program, please call 800-867-7777 or visit fulldisclosure.net. Transcripts or DVD copies of this program are also available on our website. Full Disclosure, the news behind the news.